Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, August 13th, 2021. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered or been exposed to. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of that infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. And you can actually download the actual worksheet itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it again and again. You can also download a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that, or they've been giving powerful testimonials about how the active use of that tool has provided positive results in their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it'll give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it has a tendency to produce comments, questions, answers, refutations, stories, soliloquies, things like that. And if you have any of those, you can give us a call and share them with us at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can use the contact form at mindshiftersacademy.org website. We're also doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year. This is the 225th day of the year, and the workbook lesson for today reads, The Creator is my Father, and his son loves him. So it says, Father, I must return your love for me, for giving and receiving are the same. And you've given all of your love to me. I must return it, for I want it. Mine in full awareness, blazing in my mind, and keeping it within its kindly light. Inviolate, beloved, and fear behind, and only peace ahead. how still the way your loving Son is led along to you. Brother, we find that stillness right now. The way is open. Now we follow it in peace together. You have reached your hand to me, and I will never leave you. We are one, and it is but this oneness that we seek as we accomplish these few final steps which end a journey that has not begun. We're also doing Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment. And again, she introduced this section by saying there are quite a few of these that don't really resonate so well with her. But she titles this lesson 225 as Push the Damn Button. She quotes Meredith Young Sowers as saying, life is not what it seems. It is so much better. Pam writes, so I have this car. It's a Prius. Dead Frog Green, as Taz nicknamed its color. Among the many things I adore about my car is that it has a button slightly larger than a quarter. I push it, and voila, the engine roars to life. I move a little lever, and like a faithful chariot, it makes me go wherever I want to go. I have absolutely no idea how that happens. I've heard there are things like transmissions, axles, motors, but like Alicia Silverstone's movie, I'm completely and utterly clueless. And that's okay with me. It's also my position on these daily lessons. I notice my little pea brain wanting to understand how this transformation works. I want to ask, but why? But how? What exactly does it mean to live and move in beingness? I'm still not exactly sure. All I know is that once I started pushing the button, or, for instance, finding the stillness promised in Lesson 225, my life started moving forward. I quit breaking down on the side of the road. I stopped running out of gas. I am abundantly grateful that I didn't have to read every little detail of the manual or understand the drivetrain or really do anything but push the damn button. I love that it's not up to me. So use the lessons, read them, put your foot forward and take the step that's asked and watch for the results to happen. No understanding required. And in that sense, I mean understanding by the conscious logical mind that wants to crush everything down into these little segments that it can have words for and tie up with a neat little package with a bow. So we have 50 minutes left, and we have plenty of time to talk about a topic, a question, an answer. 563-999-3581. We had a support group last night, and we listened to an hour of Adi Ashanti talking about transformative love. And then we had a discussion about people who are in our lives for various reasons, and we can't always figure that out. And essentially, the message from last night's support group is pretty much the same as the message from Pam Grout's book. And that is, you know, just trust that it's going to happen without your understanding how. There's only peace ahead and fear is behind us. So take the step. Look for that stillness in this now moment and move forward in peace together with all of creation. So it's pretty interesting to me, especially because I look at it almost always after the fact, how much synergy and synchronicity there is between the daily lesson and the flow of events in and out of my office and around my life and through the support group. And then I take a step back further and I realize, well, yeah, of course there's going to be synchronicity and synergy, because that's all the Course in Miracles is talking about, is a different way for us to look at and begin to experience our lives and to understand at deeper and deeper levels the core of the Michael Rice teaching, which is that I'm the one creating all of the emotions I experience, and my internal guidance system is built around the idea that if I'm feeling a negative emotional experience, that's my warning, that's my indicator that my thought process is in error. So moving forward in a positive manner means refusing to move forward when my negative emotional states are activated, while blaming life or people around me for those emotional states. Moving forward in a positive way means taking full responsibility for those emotions, doing the best I can to dismantle them before taking an action, making a statement, or taking a step forward, and watching how when I do that, my life just keeps getting better and better and better. One of the big spiritual teachings around that is the idea of allowing and letting things be in the flow of life rather than trying to hold on or grasp or identify with something. And in the Anthony DeMello book, Awakenings, he tells the story of this, I forget the gentleman's name, but he's so fabled that he's claimed by a number of different cultures. And he tells these stories where most of the time the joke is on him, and he turns out to be the old fool. But in one story, he tells of how he was sitting in the middle of town strumming a guitar, but just playing one note. And he just kept playing the one note over and over and over again. And somebody came along and several people started listening and said, well, that's really beautiful. That's a beautiful note. And then somebody piped up and said, yeah, Nasirin, why don't you start playing a whole bunch of other notes like all of the other musicians do? And Nasirin said, oh, those idiots, they're all searching for the perfect note, and I found it. So he's going to stay right there, strumming that one note over and over and over again. Well, imagine if you went to a symphony concert and you just absolutely loved the first 8 bars of the symphony. And you, as soon as they moved on to the second 8, you jumped up and started screaming at them to back up and play those 8 bars again. Well, it wouldn't go so well, right? We are like that in life. We are that ridiculous in life that we want to keep rehashing, recreating, reliving, judging, grasping, pushing away at certain parts, grasping at other parts of our life experience, of our interactions with people. And we've been conditioned to think that that's perfectly okay, that that makes sense. And it's just as nuts as jumping up in the middle of the symphony hall and demanding that they replay the first 8 bars again. But unless we're introduced to the perspective that shows how bizarre that is, unless we're able to question what it is that we do to ourselves and our loved ones, etc., when we try to insist that life goes in the flow that my conscious logical mind wants it to be in, unless we're able to question that, we never get to see. We never get to see the impact of our brutish, demanding, childish perspective, and we never get to experience the actual flow of life. I was sitting with a 24-year-old earlier today, and trying to help her understand what Krishnamurti points out so clearly in so many of his writings, that most human beings have never had a relationship with another human being. They've only ever had a relationship with their fantasy about the other person. And if I'm not able to start observing that, I can't break out of that cycle. And of course, the first question out of her mouth is, okay, but when I observe it, then what do I do? And the answer is nothing. You let the truth of it act on you and let the truth of the moment create your response. You don't try to pre-think what your response will be when you realize in the moment that you're fantasizing about life in the future with the person you're on a date with, rather than being on the date with the person, rather than actually being in a relationship with them in the moment. One of the ways Krishnamurti talks about that is to say, if you're walking down the street and your eyes are open looking at the street and you're paying attention, and in front of you, 10 feet in front of you, you see an open manhole and the cover dragged off to the side, is there any part of your mind that has to start a debate about, well, what should I do? Should I keep walking straight and then fall into the manhole, or should I just stop and stare at it, or should I walk around it? There's no part of your mind that engages in that silliness. The truth of the fact that there's a gaping hole in the street in front of you acts on you, and you respond appropriately given the moment, given all of the other barriers or restrictions or open pathways. Well, so the same thing happens when you're in a relationship, in a moment with someone, when you're awake enough to be aware that your thoughts have raced on ahead into the future about what it might be like to marry this person or be involved in a work project with them or have children with them or, you know, get married and live happily ever after, enjoying your final years in a rocking chair on a wooden porch in the, you know, in the country. All of that, the moment you recognize it, acts on you. You don't have to ask yourself, well, what do? I just caught myself fantasizing about the future. In the moment that you recognize it, the awareness is born that you are not connected to the person in front of you, and instantly you become more connected. So our task, as we continue to become aware of and then work to dismantle the unproductive and the negative and the judgmental conditioning that we've been born into, is to increase our awareness, to consciously nurture that state of observation, and to allow that it will inform us, that it's not going to be my ego mind deciding what to do when the open manhole appears in the street in front of me. Because the ego mind might want to go into a tirade about how ridiculous this is and who's responsible and there's a lawsuit waiting to happen and I pay taxes in this town, and if somebody falls in that hole, then they're going to sue, and then I'm going to have to pay for that with my taxes. And all of that is ego. All of that is judging, arguing, fighting against what is. And especially, I can instantly know that that's true, especially when there's a negative emotional state accompanying those thoughts. So in this work, what we would recommend is a person steps into use of the tools, breathing that initiates the parasympathetic response, that rest and digest response in the human being, identification of the thought and the goal, canceling both of them, asking to be shown the hidden part of your mind that's actually generating this negative emotional energy, and then letting the truth, the actuality of the moment, act on you. And from that space, you might do several of the things that your ego may have suggested, but you will do them from a calm, compassionate, respectful space, probably to much better benefit for you and everyone involved. So, that's our offering. We have a whole cadre of tools that are available to help you accomplish that. And the primary one involves understanding that every time I'm upset about anything, it's going to mean a number of things. I can know instantly that, number one, if I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion active in my system, I can instantly know that it's based in a lie or a falsehood. Number two, that this is an old tape playing, that I'm not upset about what's going on in the moment, that I have now entered into some kind of a fantasy about how things should be that's other than the way they are, and that's a combination of my experiences from the past and my judgment, and it's got nothing to do with the actuality of the life in front of me. And the third thing I can know instantly is, if I take an action from it, I'm just going to make my current situation worse. I cannot possibly improve a life circumstance by pouring negative emotional energy into it. The next thing I can know instantly is, if I have a negative emotional state up in my energy system, I'm holding on to a goal right now that's not getting met. And the easiest way to identify that goal, the most accurate way to identify that goal, is to ask myself, what's the thought I'm using to create that negative emotional state? When I accurately define that thought, the goal that's not getting met will be contained in that thought. Once I've identified the thought and the goal, I can train myself in the skill, in the power of canceling, consciously canceling any goal that's not getting met when there's a negative emotional state active. And when I do that and ask to be shown, it opens, as Michael Rice would say, a keyway, a direct pathway to the part of my mind that's actually responsible for generating that negative emotional state. And then that's just like the manhole that's open. As soon as I see it, I don't need to ask, what do I do about this? This takes us back to one of the lines from A Course in Miracles where it says, you need only return to the original error in thought in order for all of the negative effects of that error to be dismantled in your life. And when you see absolutely clearly the root of the part of your mind, the consciousness, the traumatic energies, etc., that are giving rise to this negative emotional state, it will dissolve. And when it dissolves, it leaves you with a clearer, more accurate picture of actuality in your life. And when you've got that, when you've got a higher resolution, clear, unobstructed view of all of the important factors about what's going on in the moment, you make far better decisions. Your life goes better. Your relationships work out better. You get in touch with your bliss or your joy far more often. And that all sounds like a bunch of boxes I'd like to check off, and that's why I use these tools. I want to continually get as much access to the highest and best information as I possibly can because that's when I make my best decisions. When I have access to both the emotional and the logical sides of my mind and the information they can offer up, I make better decisions and my life goes better. So, in any way I can, every day I work to become more and more okay with what is unfolding and catch myself in the fantasy of wanting it to be different than it is. And when I see that happening, how to get through it in a more productive way just immediately comes to mind. And then I act based on the highest and best information I have at the time. One of the sessions I had earlier today was having an intense discussion about wanting someone else to be different than they are. And you know, there's a certain way to look at life and relationships that says that's the only thing that's ever caused a problem in a relationship. So whether it's I want my business partner to, you know, wash her dirty dishes in the kitchen so that we don't have to pay somebody to do that and I don't have to do it, or whether it's me wanting my child to come home on time or choose the subject in school that I think is the most reasonable to pursue as a career, or whether it's any desire for anyone in my life to be different than they are. When that happens, I've just built a prison for myself and thrown away the key. One of my favorite lines from the mirror theory is, the minute you think someone else has to change in order for you to be happy, the key to happiness is lost. And I know that there are people who strongly resist that observation. And they say, yes, but what this person is doing is wrong and really needs to stop. And I can't rest until I get them to change, or I can't stay in this relationship unless they change this or that. And all of those things might be true, because they're true for a person when that person believes they're true. Right? What you believe is true, and what you pour your mind energy into becomes those things that you structure your experience of life with. And if I want to argue with somebody who has a different experience in life than I do, I'm putting myself in a prison. There's a meme that says, you know, one of the deep truths in life is that you should never argue with anybody who is foolish. And you know, the wise person makes that proclamation, and instantly someone near them says, I disagree. And the wise person says, you're right, of course. Now, there are some people who would say, why would the wise person give in? Because what they said was true. They need to stand up for what's true. Well, there's an enormous difference, and I've learned this the hard way in my life. There's an enormous difference between me knowing or understanding what the truth of something is for me and me trying to get somebody else to accept or acknowledge or agree with me in that. So if I understand that, you know, that I've been as respectful as I know how to be, and that I was intending only respect and appreciation and in my interactions with another person, And that person experienced me as being rude and abusive, and it is pointless for me to try to convince them that I was not as they experienced me to be. So try to catch the words. It's pointless for me to try to convince them that I am not or was not as they experienced me to be. It's pointless for me to try to convince them that I'm different than they think I am. And it's pointless for me to try to convince them that what they experienced wasn't real, because that's what they experienced. So it was real for them. And the wise person knows it's not useful to argue with someone who disagrees with you. It's not useful to try and change a person's mind when they are not open to new perspective, when they're clinging to their belief or their experience. I can only suggest, and usually just once, not 2, 3, or 17 times, I can usually just suggest that I have had a different experience, and I'd be happy to share it with them if they're interested. And when they say yes, go ahead. And when they say no, I say, okay. You know, thanks for playing. Try again. Move on. Find the next person to interact with, because I'm not going to make headway with someone who does not want to make headway. And sometimes with that approach, I can maintain a status in a relationship that allows us to move forward respectfully and peacefully. And sometimes that's not possible because the other person doesn't want to go there. And I can only do, you know, my half of the relationship. And if it just remains one half, it's not really a relationship. It's just a pattern of interaction. So I had somebody in my office earlier today talking about somebody who was gaslighting them. And she, as soon as she realized that she was being told that she did something she never did, she flew into a rage. And I suggested that she could avoid that in the future by modifying her response. And she said, you know, with her very strong emotional protest, even in the session, she said, but I never did that. That's not what happened. And she just kept saying, you know, that for this other person, she kept yelling, I didn't do that. That's not what happened. You're not telling the truth. And so I suggested that she could extract herself from that negative emotion-generating dynamic by simply rephrasing it as saying, that's not how I experienced it. That's not how I remember it. And when you do that, it's a major shift. That's a tectonic plate shift. It opens a door. It leaves a big space. Now, the other person has to step through that door. They don't necessarily have to step through that door. They have to make their choice to step through or not. But when I talk about how this was what I remember or this is how I experienced it, I leave it open for them to have had a different memory and a different experience. And when I keep talking about it simply from the perspective of my impression, my understanding, and my memory, and I leave it open that the other person could have a different impression and perspective and memory, or interpretation and memory. I don't get enraged. I'm not fighting to be right. I'm not defending a position. I'm not trying to get something from someone else that they don't want to give me, like agreement or an apology or whatever. And that is extraordinarily liberating. When we understand that we are the ones creating our experience of life, quite literally, we understand that we are carrying around inside of us the filters, the prejudices, the biases, the dynamics that construct everything we see and give meaning to everything we hear and create these sometimes elaborate interpretations about very simple, very direct stimuli from the outside environment. When we understand that we're doing that in this ultra-high active participatory process, then when we begin to create an experience we don't like, it gets easier for us to take a breath, turn the focus inside, and ask, how are we creating that experience, and or what are we making the situation mean? And then in that moment, a world of new possibilities opens to us. But for as long as I hold on to my conclusion that I'm right and the other person's wrong, I hide from myself the potential to be liberated from that dynamic. So if you're looking for liberty, if you're looking for a little bit more freedom of movement, if you're looking for a little bit more control over your emotional state, we have some wonderful tools that can help you accomplish that. So we've got about 20 minutes left. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What are your Friday thoughts heading into this weekend? What would you like to share with our audience? What kind of book recommendations do you have for us this weekend, this week, during the week? It's been a rather strange kind of rollout. There's an interview that I did with Martin Whiteley, who is in Australia, who wrote a book about overprescribing the stimulants for children in Australia, ostensibly for the treatment of attention deficit and hyperactivity and things like that. So that's available on the On Your Mind podcast, hosted by Journeys Dream. To access that, you can go to journeysdream.org, all one word. And in the most recent website formulation, you need to click on the Get Help tab of the menu, and then the podcast is the first option underneath the Get Help menu. Alternatively, you can go to YouTube and search for the On Your Mind podcast by Journeys Dream and see some of those podcast videos. I'm again recommending that you help us out if you feel so inclined by letting us know about good books you've read on the topic of self-help, psychology, spirituality, etc. Podcasts that you listen to. I have recommended on this show a couple times already the podcast that began in June of this year with Keris, K-E-R-I-S, and her podcast is titled Unapologetically Black Unicorns, and she's interviewing people who are standouts in various aspects of fields related to mental health and humane treatment for people who are having mental health challenges. And she herself has lived experience with mental health challenges and the current conventional system, which is not very humane, not very compassionate. And so you can hear her interview therapists, peer treatment activists, people who've had lived experience with mental health issues, writers, doctors, unapologetically black unicorns, UBU for short, and that's a play on words as well, and wherever you get your podcasts. And I am quite hopeful that sometime in October, Karis has agreed to this, that I'll be able to get her in an interview and be happy to share that with the Mindshifter Radio community if that fits, after I get a chance to hear the content of the call. I think I mentioned yesterday that I had the privilege of interviewing Paul Hendry from Scotland, and he is I'm misspeaking. Yesterday I was interviewing Steve Michio, and he's another person who's had lived experience, was diagnosed with bipolar, was hospitalized and pumped up with all kinds of meds, and he fought his way through all of that and got back to his high level of functioning, and then shifted his focus to being able to help people who have mental health challenges and to revise the way the system deals with people, to make it more humane, more compassionate, more person-centered. And his big key for doing that is using people who have been through these mental health challenges themselves and give them training so they can be peer support. And with a compassionate care model, he's opened up over 40 houses around the country and in other countries where they give care to people as crisis support before they end up in a police custody or in a hospital emergency room or a psychiatric hospital. And the results, he's doing evidence-based work. They're collecting data on the millions of dollars they're saving to cities and counties and states because they are intervening before the difficulties progress to legal status or need for hospitalization, legal fights about holding someone in a hospital without their consent, the legal fight to try and force someone to take medications they don't want. And what they're doing is far more healing, nurturance, and support than simply the treatment of a symptom here or there. It's a model that follows the theme of compassionate care and building on lived experience. So rather than having doctors and social workers who are detached from life and from the person, they're using people with lived experience in mental health who have overcome those challenges, become highly functional in their lives, and then get trained for the peer counseling, the listening skills, the screening, the resource management. And one of the stories he told was how, you know, it's not uncommon for them to be on a hospital unit and have one of the peer support people come into the unit, and the patients flock to this person, greeting him or her, chatting up, you know, telling them stories, asking them things, and having the social worker and the psychologist and the nurses at the nursing station comment, well, the patients don't greet me like that. And Steve, when he hears that, is there to tell them, yeah, that's because you don't treat these people like people. You treat them like a list of symptoms and a diagnosis and some chart notes to be made. The peers understand the essential need to connect with people at that human level. And they do it before all of the labeling and treatments and listing of symptoms. And that is such a powerful thing to do that he said if you came to one of their houses, one of their peer-led support houses, or what they call respite homes, you would see people being, you know, getting there in the first, you know, few hours they're there, and people just sitting them down, talking to them, helping them get comfortable. You don't see people taking all kinds of notes and having them fill out paperwork and forms and insurance forms and before they are connected, before they're talked to, before they're offered some, you know, food or drink and some comfortable place to sit and or shown around the place. You see connection, and then the peer worker explains to the person that we'd like to gather some information, we'd like to get your story down, we'd like to learn to know you more, and yeah, we do need to eventually gather some information, and here's why. We want to be able to, you know, bill the state or the county or the city to get reimbursed so that we can maintain this house. We'd like to be able to communicate with other people that might need to support you, whether it's friends or family. And so the information eventually gets collected, but it's collected after a connection is made, a person-to-person connection. This echoes what Robert Whittaker talks about in his book, Mad in America, and the Soteria movement, Sotoria, I believe it's spelled. And these are houses that are based on compassionate care. And it's based on a model that the Quakers developed back in the 1700s and 1800s, that they, because of their theological beliefs, they treated these people who had mental health issues first and foremost as brothers and sisters, children of God, etc., whatever the lingo is in the Quaker faith. I'm not so well versed in that, but they saw them as people first. And they developed what came to be known as the model of compassionate care. And they housed these people in real houses with comfortable furniture, with daily living activities, with skill building for music and gardening and the arts and, you know, home economics type classes, sewing, clothes washing. They engaged people in the process of living life and teaching them these skills as they supported these people who were going through challenges in their mental health, in their mental and emotional lives. So I get excited every time I find yet another person or another organization that is directing time, intelligence, money, and energy toward creating any similar model, any model that's similar to compassionate care, anything like the sameHereGlobal.org website where you can go and find practitioners from therapists to psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, naturopathic doctors, et cetera, who own that they've had some experience either in their immediate family or in their own personal life with challenges to their mental health, and they are trying to connect with people at that fundamental level that we're all in this together, and they're engaged in an integrative approach. They are not simply checking off a list of symptoms from a checklist and then applying the prescribed, the matching medication or treatment regimen. They're willing to look at people as whole people, and they're willing to pull in whatever resources from the wide range of aspects of life and life skills management and relationship and purpose and meaning in life to help each individual create a life that they would enjoy living, that could have satisfaction, connection, respect, productivity, enjoyment. And that website is all one word, sameHereGlobal.org. And since nobody has a hand up, we'll recap that you can also go to OML for 1 million lives .world, WORLD. And if you go to that webpage, you can create a username and password and get access to their check-in, their mental health check-in, and answer a series of questions on a sliding scale from, you know, never to always or somewhere in the middle. And by your self-report, you create a picture, a snapshot of how you're doing these days in the context of your life right now. I had another person that I worked with, and they did the mental health check-in, and they said, I'm not doing well. And I said, well, that's one way to look at it, but when you consider the context, she has parents that are critically ill. She has a child that is getting ready to go back into school, and it might be virtual again. It might be part virtual and part in person. She's a single parent. She works. She's got, you know, dynamics in the neighborhood that require attention. So in almost every area of her life, things have been more than the usual stressful. She has her own health concerns. And when you put it in that context, she's doing really well. And there are a couple points that came up when she answered the questions on the mental health check-in that let her know here's where she could make the most progress, feel the most benefit if she put some time into these areas, because they're the ones that are the weakest right now. So that's another resource that's available absolutely free. Again, we really like to get people to go to your local, whether it's the App Store for Apple or the Google Play Store, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to that completely free and private app, and use that soon and often. That is a daily or multiple times a day mental emotional hygiene tool that's also available absolutely free. And I've been using it to great effect in my life for over 17 years. And there's a whole host of other worksheets and tools on that website. If you just scroll down after you click on the Start Here link on the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, and personally, I've gotten tremendous benefit out of the three early memories of conflict. I've used that at least more than 10 times in my life. I used to use it almost every time I replayed that video. I think it's the healing through relationships video. But one of the videos that Michael Rice has, for almost every video he has, there's a tool attached. And the healing through relationships, I think, has the list everybody who's offended you and then your advice to them and your punishment thought, et cetera. So this is probably, maybe it's the codependent to interdependent relationship, interdependence video. But every time I've used that tool, this three early memories of conflict, I get another aspect, another little view, another little window into what's going on in my life. And depending upon where I am in my life, I might remember different early memories of conflict, and I might uncover a slightly different aspect of a pattern that's unproductive that I downloaded when I was much younger, when I didn't have the skills and resources and maturity that I have now, that I wasn't aware. This pattern gets activated and it takes over my behavior. Well, what a relief it's been to me to be able to see that and correct it, so that instead of acting the same way I did when I was 9 or 10 years old, even though I'm in my 60s and I'm a psychologist and I should know a lot better, now I can catch that, unravel that pattern, unravel some of the emotional dynamics and sometimes the traumatic energies that are attached to them in my system, and then I'm free to respond with some of the more mature coping mechanisms and life experiences that I've developed in becoming a psychologist and living independently. And so that's another tool that's available absolutely free at whyagain.org. And that's just about the end of our show. I will remind us all that we come from love, we're made of love, we actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. I appreciate you. And I hope you have a good weekend.
All right. You too. Be well.
Thanks. Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, August the 13th, 2021. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just invite everybody to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, and you can click on the start here, or you can scroll down a little bit and there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. You can click on that. They both take you to the same place, where you can access all of the worksheets, lots of audios and videos, and just lots of information out there. Still working on the website, so if you run across anything that seems to be a broken link or anything, please let me know. Send me an email at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know the URL that's not working or something that you feel needs to be changed or added. And I'll see about getting all of that fixed. I'll also go ahead and make the announcement that if we have enough people to want to participate in it, that on Friday the 20th and Saturday the 21st, we are going to do a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing online. It'll be done by Zoom. Cost is $125, and we'll do both the Mind Shifters and the Still Point Breathing. The times on those are, let me look, hold on a second. I thought I had that written in my calendar. And I don't. So I'll have to get get with you on that. I think I put it in the notes for yesterday. So you can let me flip over there real quick and see if they're there. I also don't have all of the radio show notes up there. I need to get that up to date as well. It's been a little busy, a little bit of I didn't do notes yesterday because we had something come up that we had to be away and had Dr. Tim play a recording of an hour-long Why Again workshop. But the day before that, I had listed the notes. Friday, August the 20th, it'll be from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Saturday, the 21st, it'll be from 10 a.m. to approximately 5 p.m. And again, that's Eastern Time. And so if you're interested in registering for that breath workshop next weekend, please contact Michael or I and let us know that you're wanting to be part of that. Welcome, Michael.
Okay, dear heart, thank you. And actually, it may go as late as 6 o'clock. Sometime between 5 and 6 will be the completion point for Saturdays. Mind Shifters and Still Friday and Saturdays, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop. So, delighted that you're here. Delighted that you've come to play with these ancient ideas and the mind-boggling wisdom that we find when we go back to the original Aramaic language. It's just, you know, we've all heard that phrase, lost in translation. Well, my offering is that this ancient teacher named Yeshua, they call him Jesus. That's another little piece of insanity. You know, they had a rabbi that they wanted to sell to the Greco-Roman world. And, you know, how do you sell Yeshua to the Greeks and the Romans? So let's take a look. How can we do something about that? Well, like they did with virtually everything else in decimating his teachings, they decimated his name. Jesus. Hail Zeus. Hey, everybody in the Greco-Roman world knew Zeus. So let's change his name. Let's change his teachings. Let's turn his teachings into Greek philosophy. Let's change his name. Everybody in that world knows Zeus, so Hail Zeus becomes the greeting. And the shift in his name is matched only by the shift out of application, sanity, functionality, by the changing of the meanings of the words that he used. You know, if we listen to Vladimir Lenin, the man who's probably responsible for more deaths than anyone in human history, he tells us if you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. You look at the viciousness, the violence, the vile language that so many in this culture today are putting up with and call them, praising, supporting, and calling themselves quote-unquote Christians. It's just amazing. How do you do that? How does that happen? Well, all you have to do is change the meaning of the words. His words, and it's interesting that the derivation of the words, his words have been Hellenized. Boy, so appropriate. But when you go back to those first century words, you see, you find out exactly how to protect the human mind from insanity. You find out exactly how stress drives human behavior. You find out exactly what the root of human behavior is and exactly where the solution is. And if there is stored pain or trauma in one's generations, you find out exactly how to get rid of that. Go find me a church that tells you how to do all of that. If the man sat in most churches today, he'd say, it's all Greek to me. because that's what it is. It's all Greek. And so we are here to restore a faithful translation, a translation of words faithful to the original Aramaic language and the words as they drop from his lips. And there are just so many things that have been lost. You know, we live in a culture that love is sexual athletics. Boy, you know, love whoever you want, and it doesn't matter. In Aramaic, love describes the state of being. It's human life. It's got nothing to do with sexual athletics. Oh, Hellenize the teachings, and you're told somebody else is the reason you're in pain or upset, but you just be big about it and you forgive them. And the teaching on forgiveness has been destroyed. Sin, oh, there's a big one. You take an archery term that simply is a warning signal that says, if you engage in energy that's off the mark, because the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term. If you're on the archery range and fired at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell sin. But let's turn that into some evil, terrible, awful hellfire and brimstone thing that we can threaten little kids to send them to hell, and they'll live their whole adult lives into this terror of this God that would burn them in fire for eternity. Oh, the bastardization of the teaching is just so, so bizarre, so insane. You take a warning that says if you engage in enough energy that's off the mark, and you recognize that your mind functions through every cell in your body, then you'll be filling your body with energies that are off the mark, sin. And if you do that, you're going to die. Put it into the Greek, and you got a great root for a hellfire and brimstone teaching and tell people that God's going to destroy them, kill them, and send them to hell for their sins. And there's so much, you know. You hear these people saying things like, ah, fear, that is the beginning of wisdom. And you hear the man that they ostensibly represent, and at least 15 different times he says, fear not. And if you look at some of the modern translations, that directive from him disappears almost entirely. Because somebody knows that if you can keep people in fear, and guess who they were? It was the Greek gods. It was that whole pantheon. If you can keep people in fear, you can terrorize them, control them. You can make them have holy wars. You can do, you can have crusades. You can go literally have rivers of blood running in cities in the name of a man who says, I went on the battlefield and I saw a cross and I knew that I was going to do holy war. And when you go back to the actual teachings of the man, there is a complete, comprehensive structure that reflects exactly what human life is, exactly how to live as a human being, and if you lose your human life, exactly how to be restored to your human life. And it's been turned into something that, I don't know, how many tens or hundreds of thousands of preachers have stood up there in rage. I remember sitting in a church I'd been invited to, not one I would normally go to. And there's a little kid, you know, 12, 13 years of age, about two rows in front of us. And the preacher's just rocking up a storm. I mean, raging about this threatening God that's going to get him. And I just watch this little kid. It's like he's shrinking deeper and deeper and deeper into his seat in terror. And I can just about hear his mind talking about how his father has terrorized him. And here's this preacher up there just carrying on the program. And I say to myself, oh, man, if Yeshua were sitting here, he'd say, these children, they are of the kingdom of heaven already. What are you doing to them? And the kingdom of heaven, by the way, another bastardization, it means the community of love. That's all it means in Aramaic. It's got nothing to do with some afterlife. You're going to go off to some place. Here. Listen to me. It's here. It's now. It's within you. But if there is rage and hatred and vengeance in you, and you don't know that there's a mindset that you can use to correct that, and there is a tool with which you can remove that hate and fear and rage and guilt that has probably been going on in your generations for a thousand lifetimes, if you don't know that, you're lost in it. And it's time for us to wake up. Time for us to really, truly recognize what human life is. And if you've ever held a newborn child and you've ever tapped into that newborn life, you know exactly what it is. It is the presence of active love. This is a question that Jeannie and I have asked of tens of thousands of people all over the globe. Have you ever held a newborn? Describe the essence of the newborn. And virtually everybody says love or some variation on the theme of love. And you realize what human life is. And when you tap into that essential nature of that newborn, notice that the newborn is not loving you. Love is not something we do. It's not something we give. It's not something we get or will ever receive from anyone else. It's a state of being. It's who we are. The newborn is the presence of love. You are the presence of love. And when the man talks about being restored, he's talking about being restored to who you are, to your proper life. And in order for you to live your proper life, the life you're living now has to die. He says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. What does that mean? It means that there is a false self based in the lie. And if hostility and fear is part of your life, then you're living out of a false self. You're living out of a self that doesn't exist except as a hallucination in your mind based on your thought disorders, key to hostility and fear, sin, energies that are off the mark. And the result is if you do that, you die. What if we were designed to literally live? Now, I'm going back to my physics background now. I'm going to switch out of the theological for a minute, go back to my physics work. There is only one thing in the universe, and that is energy. And it can neither be created nor destroyed. It is eternal. If that's true, then you and I must be energy, and you and I must be eternal. What do you need to overcome? What do you need to forgive? What do you need to remove from your physiology that's creating distortions of physiology we call diseases? So there's another thing he said. Don't judge by appearances. What's an appearance? A body is an appearance. There's no such thing as a body. Let's listen to Einstein. He says this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibration have been so lowered to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. The material world doesn't exist. It's all an appearance created by perception in the mind. And there is a self that is an appearance, created perception in the mind. And that self has to die in order for you to come back into incarnation in your form and live as the presence of love you were designed to. And the world is so degraded from that state. People think, oh, a little fear, a little hate, a little violence, a little vengeance, a little gossip, a little slander. And we've been talking to Richard in his chapter in the book and talking about the little violences that most people ignore. Because, well, that's just part of life. My offering is that is not part of life. That is part of death. Key thought we finished with on the bottom of page 98 in the book, if you've been following along with us in From Why Is This Happening to Me Again, the key thought is the tools used to produce a result always produces a result like the tools. And Richard says to me in that context, well, fear and violence have always been with us for all of history, Michael. I want to live as peace as much as the next guy, but do you honestly think you can eliminate our world's insanities with these tools? Sounds like an impossible dream. So I return the question, do you think fear is a natural thing for human beings? Richard agreed, well, I think we've bought into a lie. I believe it's time for us to confront the lie and face ourselves. It's time to heal the structures that support mental, emotional, spiritual, verbal, and physical abuse in our world. Hostility and violence in every form within families, communities, nations must come to an end if humans are to survive, let alone live in peace. Taking responsibility and refusing the hostility fix each time the mind automatically offers it is one of the keys to healing and aliveness. Taking belief held by many people is that peace is not possible, nor is it desirable, and that violence is not only natural, but necessary. It is a mind unwilling to be responsible, deal with its hurts, and heal that promotes such insane and barbaric dogma. That peace is not possible is a rationalization for violence used by those who cannot or will not control their own thoughts, words, or actions. I recall my son at about the age of 8 asking, why are people killed? To show that killing people is wrong. Out of the mouths of babes, when do we wake up? Well, hopefully, your engaging of in these tools is part of your wake-up process, and that you're taking the tools and actually putting the pen to the paper. You know, we're not here for mental masturbation. We're not here to just talk about fun ideas. We're here to invite people to step in, put the pen to the paper, and actually do the work. If you've got pain in your body, guess what? There's sin in your body. The mind functions through every cell in your structure, and every cell that holds an energy that's off the mark is saying, ouch. And pain is a result of that. And those energies can be removed. They can be forgiven. But, you know, you got to face them first. And that is not always Dr. Feelgood. Facing those things can be pretty intense and pretty traumatic as well. And so we're here to support allowing yourself to experience the traumatic. To confront any of that energy that is within your structure and removing them. That's what we're here for. And I've shared this piece before, but it fits so perfectly here. I'm going to share it once again. This was written in the 17th century, early 1700s. It was written by a man named Francois Fenelon. And he's talking about what happens when people start to do their work. And here's what he says. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We're amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing from the depths of our own heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we had harbored such things. and we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we are filled with horror. Bear in mind, for your comfort, that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. And that's what needs to be faced by each individual that's going to step into the process of healing. And we're here to support and encourage. And for people who don't have the courage to face those things on their own, borrow ours and allow yourself to go there. I love one of the statements Dr. Tim makes often, quoting one of his other mentors. And he says, there is no such thing as bad self-knowledge. Whatever you find in there, confronting it from the space of conscious, active, present love is what will bring its dissolution. And we are here to remove and dissolve everything that is less than love. And that's only done by confronting it and the willingness to use the work, to use the tools. If you're not using the forgiveness processes yet, please go to our website, whyagain.org. The upper left-hand corner, there's a button that says Start Here. Follow the links. It'll walk you right through. Here's how it is done. Everything is there as to how to do it. The purpose of us doing this show is to support you making use of those tools and walking through those states. If you go to the website and start following those links again, everything is there. There's nothing withheld. It's free. And we're here to answer every question that you've got and support you in it. There is a mechanism, yes, if you want to pay for it. And I encourage you to want to pay for it. You know, this doesn't happen for nothing. And we do as much as we can for free, but we haven't figured out how to do it all for nothing yet. So if it supports you, you know, there's a donate button on our website, or there are DVDs, or there are downloads of our products. We have a 90-hour, we've just completed putting together a 90-hour intensive on codependence to interdependence communication. You can have a permanent access to that whole 90 hours, including a whole 14-week fresh and raw food program with menus and recipes and instructions on how to do it. Two personal code evaluations, you can have that whole package for $600. And that 90 hours is going to change your life for eternity. So grab the tools. Go to the website. Again, you can do it free on the website. You can do the worksheet right there. You can print the worksheets off. Do them at home. As you delve in deeper, there'll be questions. We're here to answer those questions. We're here to refine your understanding. We're here to encourage and support you in it. You can also find, if you go to your telephone app store, be it an IBM, or pardon me, IBM, we don't have IBM operating systems on phones, the iPhone or the Android system. Type in your app store the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T, L-A-N-D, all one word, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Take it and put it to work. We're here to support you in really making these tools functional. This isn't about just a nice philosophy or an intellectual understanding. It's about doing the work. So we invite you to take the tools, put them to work, and the blessing that will come to us out of that will be that you'll develop questions. And when you come back with those questions, we'll learn things we didn't know. And we appreciate having you on our team, and we appreciate the opportunity to be on your team. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is quiet out here today. We've got several people, some that haven't been on for a while. It's good to see everyone. Press one. Talk to us.
Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? If you're on one of the stations where we can't see you in our control panel, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. Dial that number. You'll be listening to the show on your phone. Push 1. Through the magic of technology, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and you and I will be having a conversation. Ms. Jeannie always has lots of awesome insights to offer as well. We had a busy morning this morning. Our apology for not being here yesterday, but as a result of our travel out west and our travel to Heartland and bringing back a large trailer filled with things from Heartland that we've been not had access to for a couple of years due to COVID, we ended up having to move things around yesterday, and timing in the middle of the day to stop for the radio show didn't work very well. But I did hear from a couple of people who loved yesterday's show. So if you didn't listen to it, tap in. And we actually were out at 7 o'clock this morning doing the same thing, finishing that job, and just got home in time to take these awesome, fresh, organic heirloom tomatoes from the garden and make a tomato sandwich and catch that, you know, chow that down, finish the show. We're about 3 minutes before the show finished, and so we could get here to be part of this conversation and hold the space for us. We're going to have some extra muscles today, tomorrow. We're actually going to head out after the show and do another round of that. We're shifting around. We had a storage unit that was about half an hour or so away, and there was a new storage facility built just 10 minutes from here, so we canceled one, went in, and I mean, we had, 2,000 pounds of stuff to move. And so we hauled it, packed it, unpacked it, repacked it. It's in the new storage unit. So this afternoon we go to still a different storage unit that we're going to start working on emptying and moving into this one so we can consolidate them. So hold the space for us. We're getting our exercise. And in the meantime, we'd love to have a conversation with you. How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Let's have a conversation. Miss Jeannie?
Yeah, nobody has a hand up. I just had a thought, though.
Tell me.
A couple days ago, there was a conversation on the radio show about dreams and, you know, whether they were just, you know, random thoughts or whether it was the unconscious, you know, telling you something or whatever. And without going in detail, I had a dream last night, and it actually ends up that it's was an actual event in my life when I was a child that I had blocked. And so it came back to me through the dream. And so now I've got that to look at and to work through, because I had been very successful at keeping it shut down, and I couldn't have even told you that that had happened. So dreams do have messages, things that are in our unconscious, and give us information that we can work with.
Interesting. So when we talked about that earlier this morning, you hadn't confirmed it as a memory, but something surfaced since then that has tapped you into that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So I'm going to have to work through some of that. But
okay.
So
well,
anyway, those
of
you
space,
who are...
Sweetie.
Yeah. Those who are on the switchboard, if that might still be a topic that you want to discuss further, you know, press one. Or if there's any topic that you want to talk about.
Yeah, when talking about dreams, you know, it's a shock to most people to realize that dreams are just a form of perception. It's nothing but the firing of brain cells. And most of what people think they're looking at in the world is in exactly the same category. It's just firing a brain cell. You know, people think they have a set of windows called eyes. They look out through those windows and they see what's going on in the world. That's the biggest fraud that's ever been fed to us. And virtually everybody in the world lives in that fraud. Believes that. Oh, yeah, I saw that happen. You've never seen anything outside of you in your life. Oh, now, come on, Michael, aren't you getting a little... No, I mean, literally, you have never seen anything with your eyes. And you never will. The eye is a one-way valve. It's an antenna, literally. It works with light frequencies. It's the receiver for light. And, you know, thinking that you can look out through the antenna and see something is about as silly as thinking you can disconnect the wires from the back of your TV that lead to your TV antenna and look out through those wires and see out through your TV antenna. It's just plain silly, yet the whole world believes that they're looking out there. And rarely does anyone ever discover that perception is nothing but a construct of the mind. The world you think you're looking at is a product of the firing of brain cells. And I don't care whether it's when you're asleep or when you're awake. It's nothing but the firing of brain cells that creates literally the whole world that we think we see. And once you recognize that, then you realize that everything you think you see is actually telling you about the content of your mind. And once you realize that it's all the content of your mind, then you get to realize that you've got to start changing your mind if you're ever going to be free of your "why is this happening to me again" experience. So the whole premise of my book is that people live in these repeated experiences and they think the repeated experience is out there. Yeah, look at that. That happened to me again. That happened to me again. That happened. And they think it's something that came from the outside and was imposed on them. They have no idea that being formulated within their perception, it came from inside of them. And based on understanding that comes the real power of forgiveness. Because those energetic patterns that lead to perception based in pain are all forgivable. They can all be removed. And that's what we're here to do, to remove those things. And that's what the word forgive means. It is a tool with which you change the content of your mind. Now, if I were in your hometown right now, you know, Jeannie and I were on the road traveling, which we are not doing anymore after 40 years on the road. But if I were in your hometown and I was up on the platform at your local library or your local prison or your local university or grade school or church, if Jeannie were up there with me and we said what we've said so far today and then we stepped down off of the stage, you were in the audience, would you be coming over and saying, "Well, Michael or Jeannie, just one quick question. Guess why we're here on this show? We're here for that one quick question." So if you raise your hands, we'll get into that question. And if nobody has a question, maybe that means that our show is complete today. I know we've got lots on our plate. We've got more moving to do. We've got a trailer we rented early this morning that we need to pack and unpack and repack. So if nobody's got a thought for us or a question, then maybe we'll just offer a blessing to you and hope your day is awesome and that you create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. You have the power to give that. The world needs it. We join you in doing it. And on Monday, let's have a conversation. Blessings.
Hey.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.